We're talking to a lot of people about the unions and so forth. You want to take one more call before we switch the subject matter? What do we got on there? Bring the music down. Let's see who's on the call there. David Lee, first thing in the morning. Who there? Who am there?
David.
Yo, what's up?
Hey, brother, what's up? Hey, I'm a UAW member, United Auto Worker in Ohio.
Okay.
And, man, our plant is going downhill fast. They closed 9 factories already this year in North America.
And are they moving these factories to somewhere else?
Yeah, they're moving them overseas. And
where overseas? You
know, I don't know exactly where overseas, but it's just really sad, man, because those people over there will work for less pay, horrible benefits if they get any. And yet, you know, the American public is just going along with all this crap, you know?
Why do you think they're going along with all of this?
Because they're afraid to speak up. They're afraid of change.
Well, in terms of afraid of change and something that impacts everybody like this, you know, when you lose your jobs, and of course we see Michael Moore's pictures, you know, about Flint, Michigan. We hear a lot of information in the news today, one way or another, about the border and a whole lot of folks coming up from Mexico and, you know, down from Canada, et cetera, taking jobs that perhaps Americans or whoever might have had or whatever, working for lower wages, et cetera. And why do you think that those who work the hardest for the living are tolerating it? Or do you think there's just nothing that we can do?
I just think they're afraid of losing their jobs, basically. That we're giving up medical benefits. Retirees are giving up medical benefits. People that have already worked for General Motors, that's the company I work for, that have put 30 years of their life into that company, are just sitting by, you know, because they're afraid of losing everything.
Well, what happens?
They're afraid to go out on strike. They're afraid to stand up to the company. And that's what I think really made our union so strong, was we were able to stand up against, you know, the company back in the day.
When was back in the day, friend? Tell me what year that was.
Well, that was before I worked out there. I'm going to be 30 this year.
So back in the day is about when?
Back in my father's day when he worked there in the mid-70s, mid-80s.
And it was an actually superior experience, that they were a little more amenable to the needs of the worker, and that or that the union was a lot stronger and just kind of bullied their way into the truth. Is that how?
Definitely. I mean, some of the union reps we got now, they just go right along with management. Half of them come to work drunk or high or whatever. I mean, I'm planning on running for union rep.
Okay. Well, what's your name? What's your full name?
My name is Matthew. Matthew Caprutis. Don't know if I'm going to be able to do it this year because I might have missed the cutoff.
Okay. Well,
I really want to start getting educated, you know, in the whole process, too, about it, because I think we need people that think outside the box a little bit.
Okay,
you know what I mean?
Let's talk a little bit about that. Because America is the most responsive to the media. America loves publicity. We love to read it. We love to believe it. And it's a lot like Jesus. If you believe it, you'll see it. And what happens now is I see characters like Phil Knight from the Nike tennis shoe company. And he was being interviewed by somebody. I think it might have even been Mike Moore. And I don't recollect who was interviewing him, but they asked something about him surfacing out all of his jobs. They're getting all of their tennis shoes made in China or wherever, which is for, you know, 20 cents an hour without benefits, etc. I saw another documentary about, you know, the beads that they wear at Mardi Gras, and those are all made in Shantung, China, one of the most depressed, horrific, you know, like Detroit in the 60s. It's just dark and awful, and, you know, you got high infant mortality. Everybody chain smokes 4 packs a day. It's all sweatshop, etc. And Phil's, you know, the fellow who owns Nike's routine was, well, you got to make a living. Well, I can get it done cheaper and ever. And the way they rebalance it is they ship off millions of tennis shoes and they resurface tracks. Like there's a field up in Harlem where the track has been resurfaced with rubber. You know, they melt the shoes down and they pull off the canvas. They melt the rubber down and they use it for surfacing tracks like at high schools, parks, etc. And it's a great, great diversionary tactic. And America responds to that easily. Hey, let's see, you know, great, there's a promotional thing going on. He's about the neighborhood. He's about the community. You dig what I'm saying? But in fact, it's a lot more like John Gotti, who fooled everybody by giving away free yellow sweaters that he stole, and he'd have an occasional fireworks thing on the 4th of July, and all the neighborhood was going, hey, he's like Robin Hood. And then he would punish everybody one by one in terms of his extortion, in terms of the gambling, in terms of the overhead, the loan sharking, etc. He was a monster. He was an animal. But he got everybody in the neighborhood revved up because he had really good promotion. And once the unions grab some press relations and some promotion and start designing logos and great-looking ads like the Army does now, the Army has great stuff, an army of one. Think about the future, etc. I even want to join the Army now. And once you start to promote it the way they promote a football team, baby, you will get everything you want. I hope you win your job in the union, and I hope the union wins everything that you ever dreamt of, baby. Go ahead and rev me up there. What does that signal mean there, Hutch?
I think we'll take another call.
You got time for one more call?
Oh, yeah, we got plenty of time.
It doesn't matter to me who. Go ahead and spin them up. Go, 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 go. Who's on? David Lee. We're here for New York, Philly, Dallas, Boston, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, West Palm. Go ahead and speak up. There's just you, me, and 7 million of our closest friends listening in.
Hey, Dave. How you doing today?
Extraordinary, my friend. What can I talk to you about?
I've been a farmer 25 years. And
what kind of farmer? You. What kind of farmer?
Working at a tent house in Bucks County, PA.
Okay.
And did you hear last night that they did the sound check? It was awesome, dude. I bet you hate waiting for January 9th, huh?
I'm sorry that they did a sound check or what? What happened?
Mm-hmm.
Did he hang up?
I think he hung up.
Was that one of Howard Stern's minions?
Probably.
I look forward to Howard. I consider Howard a friend. I consider him a colleague. And I consider you... a social retard. Give me another call there, brother. You just swing it. David Lee, 866-313-3733. Talk to me.
Hey, what's up, Dave?
How are you tonight?
I called in regards to the MTA thing, but then you weighed in on the John Gotti thing. You called him a monster. When you talk about loan sharking, gambling, extortion, he doesn't go out and solicit people to do these things. Guys like that, you want money from him, you went to him. You wanted to gamble, you went to him. So to really call him a monster is a little bit, a little too much.
Oh, I completely disagree with you. Because when you plant all the great vices in front of somebody, it's almost impossible to not participate. I'm the first one to tell you because I've done every vice in the dictionary 17 times. I did even a couple of them with John Gotti's son at a striptease bar once upon a time. No, you can't plant. Everybody's got a soft spot. Everybody's got an Achilles heel. I don't care if it's alcohol, booze, hookers, drugs, tobacco, caffeine, doesn't matter. Everybody's got a little soft spot. And if you keep presenting it to them, it's like putting McDonald's in grade schools. Do you believe that's okay as well?
So then the Kennedys in back in the 60s, they should be reamed because their grandfather, Joe Kennedy, was a bootlegger. And back then, bootlegging was illegal. But that's how the Kennedys made their fortune. And that's okay, right? Because it's all government.
No, wait, I didn't say that. I didn't say it's okay. You're putting words in my mouth. I didn't say it's okay. Who said that was okay?
I'm not saying you. I'm saying society. Society okayed the Kennedys because they loved him, because he was a president. He was a good-looking president.
Stop. The reason they loved him is because, there you go, he had the visual. He had the promo machine. He had the haircut. He had the trophy wife. The trophy wife who had all the class and culture and knew how to speak French and had traveled the world, and they were a great media-based couple. Once the unions pick up on that, once the fire guys and the police and everybody pick up on that and start designing logos like they're, you'll start winning your court cases. And I agree with you about the Kennedys. Joe Kennedy was as rotten as a bad peach. And at the end of the day, hey, it was sad tragedy that homeboy crashes his airplane into the water. And why is a battleship floating around out there? He never even won a naval surface warfare badge. I believe that to be the smallest, lowest badge on the totem pole. You get that just for being a midshipman, I believe. I may be mistaken. Go ahead, turn him up there. Turn him up.
Huh?
I said turn you up. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Bloomberg, you can't have a billionaire deciding, like, the financial capabilities of an everyday working man. And I don't blame the MTA for striking. How do you expect people to work and not have and want them to kick in for their health benefits? That's ridiculous.
I believe that you have to have some kind of legal action, some kind of legal resource. The folks from the MTA had every reason to ask for, but so do all my brothers and sisters in blue. That's fire, paramedic, EMT, police, and everything that comes in between. I don't know. You know, the only upside that I saw of that strike was that everybody finally got out on the street and started walking around a little bit. It looked like New York in the 60s. Hey, you got a lot of good ideas, friend. What do you do for a living?
I deliver soda.
Hey, then you know exactly what you're talking about. I appreciate you calling, man. Call us back on another subject sometime. Roth, Roth Radio, 866-313-3733. Call. Talk to me. Yo. Who's up there, Hutch? Somebody? 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 Are you on?
He's gone.
Did he disappear?
One's gone. Let's try this guy.
Temporarily lost the will to continue. Who's there?
Okay, go.
Hello?
Roth Radio, live, first thing in the morning.
Oh, hi, David.
Yo, who's this?
Your last caller was an idiot, but...
No, I don't think he was an idiot at all. I think he's got a vision. I think he's confronting. I think he's diligent. And I don't think he has a secondary agenda like most people who talk about that kind of material. Now, what's your thought? Go ahead. I'll share it. You have the microphone. You're on.
Do you think Americans should buy American cars rather than Japanese cars?
Man, I am so ripped in half with this, and I'm glad you bring up the subject here, okay? Here's what I'm thinking. From my perspective, as a musician, and perhaps this is a really good analogy, a great way to draw a parallel here, it drives me nuts when people say that downloading from the internet isn't stealing, okay? It drives me crazy when people say, oh, it's not stealing when we trade files, all right? It's like I start most of my business meetings these days, especially with the guys from Infinity here. Okay, guys, what are we pretending to not know today? Of course, it's stealing, and it drives me nuts that people are counterfeiting, bootlegging, ripping off, however you, whatever adverb you want to use. Meanwhile, right this very second, I'm wearing a wristwatch. On the front, it says Seiko, the very expensive Japanese watchworks. And on the back of the casing, it says Bulgari, which is the elegant Fifth Avenue boutique, the high expensive Fifth Avenue uptown boutique. And I believe that the wristband is Rolex. And I bought the whole thing for $12 in Chinatown. This is about as counterfeit bootleg knockoff as you could possibly be. And I've been wearing the sucker for over 2 years, and it only loses about 3 minutes a day.
Come on.
So you're asking me this question. I'm torn between the duality of man. I'm that scene in Full Metal Jacket where the guy goes, how can you wear a peace helmet, peace symbol on your helmet? And on the other side, it says Born to Kill. Well, I guess I'm old enough to finally understand that. You answer the question, and let me kind of riff on that with you. Do you believe in buying American cars? Do you believe in buying foreign issue? Or does it make any difference to you at all? Go ahead, riff.
Buy American cars because I know someday in the future we can't continue to send all of our money and labor and everything overseas. We can't have a country that every time I see a new store close around here, all they do is open up a nail salon. You can't have a country that's just full of nail salons.
I think that's about as poetic as anybody has ever put it, and I think you're exactly, precisely right. Where I live in New York City, that's what you see. One by one, all of the creative, all of the American and whatnot is slowly moving towards just fast business. And everybody who is moving into the country is what the future is going to be about. All of the foreign nationals, Asians, Hispanic, hablo suficiente español. It's the second language of our country. You know what the third language is going to be? Portuguese, Brazilian. The top three bull riders today are from Brazil. They're not cowboys from Texas, okay? Sorry, go ahead. Turn them up there, Hutch.
I don't have a problem with that. I mean, I think what's made this country great all along is the immigrants we continue to bring in.
Okay, so what I'm saying is let's open up the borders more, create the spaces for work, and stop farming out the work. I love the Hispanic culture, okay? My first girlfriend, Arlene, still lives around the corner from my house in Pasadena. She runs a great restaurant, and guess what kind of restaurant? Oye, míralo. What I'm saying is open up the borders more, create more jobs here, and stop farming out to Asia and Japan, because you're sponsoring human suffering to a major max degree. Every time you pull those tennis shoes on, boy, somebody who's chain smoking in a sweatshop over in Shantung, China, had to pay the healthy price for that kind of a thing. Weigh in. What do you think on that?
Well, I think in the long term, it's great that these countries are becoming more prosperous, but the differential in the economic scale at this point is so great that we have to do something to keep jobs and employment and growth in America.
What I just read recently, and this came from some super economist that was on the cover of Time magazine recently, is that the countries who are going to score the hardest are the ones who keep all of the industry inside but have all of the immigration that used to be at the turn of the century. And that's going to be foreign nationals, that's going to be artists, that's going to be performers, people who are involved in the liberal arts. That means media, photography, promotion, the infrastructure, politics, etc. And that's why when you got to get your computer fixed, somebody in Calcutta picks up the phone. And that's who's coming up next. I say you open up the borders, let's make it mandatory that everybody learns to speak Spanish and stop farming the jobs out back to the country they just came from. Roth Radio, 866-313-3733. Weigh in with me, whatever you got on your mind. David Lee, what are we playing here? Do you want to play a tune?
Sure, why not?
Do we have more minutes to go? Can we actually take another phone call here, Hutch?
We could take another phone call.
Okay, spin me up. Spin me up one.
Let's see. Okay.
What are you writing over there, Sue?
Hey.
Anything interesting?
Big fan. How are you?
Who's talking?
My name is Jay Redleg.
Where are you from, Jay?
I'm from Old Bridge, New Jersey. 2 years.
Oh, wow. I fly to Old Bridge Airport frequently. That was where I took my FAA exam. I flew from Linden to Old Bridge. I can even tell you that's 3 November 6 on my transponder. Okay, talk. What's up?
And next time you're in town, give me a call. We'll go out.
Yeah,
and
just look up.
Just want to share this with you. 2 years cigarette-free today. 8:15 a.m. was my last cigarette 2 years ago.
It's still on your mind then. How does it feel? How do you physically feel? Do you think better? Are you more athletic? Are you winning the races? Do small animals obey your every command? Do young women hold you as the perfection of sexual supremacy? And do all men want to imitate you?
Well, married with children will say no to most of those. But
the cough is gone.
The cough is gone, but I lost 40 pounds.
Oh, really? Good
I
for you.
I have better health, and nonetheless, I am a better person overall. But I still smoke cigars, so I still cheat once in a while.
Okay. You know what? I have said before, give me a little backing track here, Hutch. I have said before that I have done things that I regret. I have done things that I really regret. But I did them all superbly.
That's the way
and,
to do it.
And the only thing that I truly regret is that I got caught up in smoking. And it was for one real reason. When I was 12, 13 years old, I went to see Goldfinger, the James Bond movie, with my father. And those Rothman cigarettes in the blue and white pack. Bond. James Bond. Really, that's the only thing I regret. I've done stuff with girls. I've done stuff with the get high. I've done stuff with a bottle of Jack Daniels that you probably would never want to repeat. But hey, I might want to repeat it. The only thing that comes back to haunt me is that smoking. That may be the one thing that gets me. Uncle Manny lasted till he was 86. My pop only lasted until he was about 74, and stress got him. I'm wondering if the smoke's going to get me. But you know what? None of my favorite music could have been done in a smoke-free environment. None of my favorite jazz music could have been done in a smoke-free environment. None of my favorite rock and roll could have been performed in a smoke-free environment. None of my favorite authors ever wrote in a smoke-free environment. What should I do? Think I ought to quit? Turn them up. Is he there? Dave, turn him up. Turn the music down. What do you think? Should I quit?
Hey, Dave, you know what? I am no man's judge. You do whatever you got to do. I did it because I had a little girl a few months before, and I found the unconditional love.
Oh, that's good for you.
Thing.
Outstanding, so, brother. Congratulations.
If you need any support, I'm here for you.
Thank you so much. Smoke free, yo. David Lee, 866-313-3733. You know what? From that guy to his daughter, play the next track here, Hutch. Pick up the lead solo there, Brian. Hit it on my time. Brian Love. Be young in the studio. I'll sing for you, babe.
Used to be so easy to give my heart away. But I found out the hard way, there's a price you have to pay.
Turn up the music, baby.
Woo! Used to be so easy. Fall in love again. But I found out the hard way. It's a road that leads to pain. I found that love was more.
It's my theme song, Roth, Roth Radio, Club Dave, where it only rains when we say so, 866-313-3733, that's 866-313-3733, you can find us on davidleeroth.com, the davidleerothshow.com, we're on the internet, taking the calls here. Generally speaking, shows like this have guests, but we left that up to our producer and his assistant. And they told me that all of our guests died in line waiting for water at the Super Bowl, at the Superdome. No, that's what he told me. I wonder if Joel Hollander knows about this. No, seriously. I have a lot of friends and people, but in terms of the person that we hired to book the guests and the producer who was in charge of doing that, there is no guest booked on this. No, really, not one. That's unconscionable, isn't it? You could almost sue somebody for that. Roth Radio, 866-313. I'd rather talk to you. 3733. Give us a buzz. Hit it up there. I think number 12 here. You got him?
Diamond,
Sal?
Diamond Dave, how are you?
Okay, Sal, it says here on my list, don't forget Pearl Harbor. Is she still dancing? Tell her I said, don't tell her I said hello. It was a bitter and acrimonious split. And I don't mean to make a joke, but I made one anyways. Go ahead. You're on. You have the spotlight.
First of all, I want to congratulate you and wish you good luck.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And I want to let you know I was a big Van Halen fan until they became Van Hagar.
Fat Sammy Slob Stop, where we fry it all and put cream on top. Sammy's doing the best he can. Come on. The mediocre are always at their best.
Yeah, but he was no David Lee Roth.
Well, you know, the idea is that you can't imitate somebody any more than I want to try and imitate Stern. I think Sam probably made a desperate technical error early in the game here. There are some people who...
Just like Stern, I don't mean to cut you off. You're a legend yourself.
Well, it's two different approaches. Two different approaches. So what does Don't Forget Pearl Harbor mean? Or did you just say that so you could get through the line?
No, I just wanted people, the American people, to remember when they go to buy a foreign car to remember all our soldiers that died in Pearl Harbor. I mean, as crappy as the Americans make cars, they're still Americans.
Okay.
I refuse to buy a Japanese car.
All right. You know what? I understand the theory. And for somebody like my Uncle Manny, who was actually there, I'll buy the theory. But in terms of who was actually alive and dealing the cards at that point in time, I don't know anybody else except my uncle who was involved in that entire time period, much less that entire conflict. And it's sort of like saying, well, all of Germany sucks because they attacked us too. And, well, the French, they attacked us back in 17, with the British. They suck the most, that. Right? Go ahead.
I guess.
No, you know, wow. Seriously.
I guess it's a union thing, too. I'm a union guy, so I buy American.
I buy American, too. And, you know, as I said, I think it's time that instead of closing the borders, let's open the borders. Let's build more factories. Let's create more jobs. Let's create more industry the way Japan did after the war. We decimated that country. I've ridden my bicycle through probably 15 cities in Japan, no lie. And I've been through Hiroshima. I've been through Sendai. I've been through Nagasaki. And we wasted that country. And look what they came back to. Look what they created. They decided to go ahead and create some level of industry. They decided to localize. It's always been an island culture. They're not connected to anything. It's surrounded by water. And they decided that they were going to bear down. Look what they finally created. There's no reason America can't do that. But you're going to have to limit people who are sending their stuff out of town, man.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%.
Do you speak Spanish?
No.
Why not?
I'm American.
You're American, but half of
Italian.
You're American, but half of the country, half of the workforce now, or soon will be, is Spanish speaking. I say we address it. I say we teach it in the classes. We localize our industry and stop shipping everything to Asia. Stop shipping everything down to South America, because everybody who wants to work here came from there for a reason. Look, if England was so cool, there would have never been pilgrims, man. Thanks for calling, 866.
I think when they come to America, they should learn how to speak English. We shouldn't have to learn how to speak their language.
I think waiting for that is going to take, like, forever. How many generations do you wait for that to happen? Because I don't think it's going to happen any more than we're going to start running our tour buses on soybeans like Willie Nelson anytime soon. I say let's address what's happening now. You can learn 50 words in Spanish in 6 months, and there isn't anything in the front of the newspaper that you can't discuss with somebody, especially if there's alcohol involved.
Oh, yeah.
That has helped me in many languages. Hey, friend, thank you so much for calling. 866-313-3733. Mark, gun control, pickup number 14. You got that, Hutch? Mark, are you actually on the phone?
Yeah.
What about gun control, for or against?
I'm against it.
Okay, talk to me about it.
Go ahead.
Well, where do you stand on it?
I would like to hear where you stand, and then I'll riff in there with you. Go ahead. You have the spotlight.
All right. Well, how do you feel about New York with carry permits?
Well, wait. You know, give me your thoughts first. Go ahead. I'm curious as to what your reflection is. I obviously, I have an editorial bias on everything that moves, but I'm very curious. You're coming kind of out of the sky here, and I'm very curious as to what's your vision. Talk to me.
Well, I'm totally against gun control.
Why?
And where do you stand on?
You sound like you're a little bit hesitant to discuss it. And if you are, in fact, then the reason for that is because we're all uneducated. I think that in terms of gun control, first, I have my own usual triple standard, which means it's okay for me to own them, my friends to own them, but not everybody else until I've tested them.
Okay.
Okay, which is a retarded approach to the subject. But I own guns. The first time I shot a rifle, I think I was 6 years old, and we were hunting muskrats down at the lake outside of Newcastle, Indiana, which is where my Uncle Manny was from. He was my guest yesterday. That was part of the culture. Also, growing up in coming out of the 50s to early 60s, you know, we all played with guns. It was all John Wayne storming the sands of Iwo Jima, and then MASH happened, and, you know, the movie, and then the television show, and this was all very familiar stuff. I have personal experiences that maybe I can share with you here.
Okay.
Hold on 1 second.
Play that music, white boy.
Set up. I don't want no gold. No, not that, Hutch.
What music do you want? That music, Dave?
That's the music. That's gun music. Hey, good thing we're not in the helicopter. We're going to talk about that later. Here's a good story for you. My dad was a prison doctor. And for the last 25 years of his life, he worked in San Quentin. He worked in Folsom Prison. He worked in Pelican Bay, which is Supermax, and Norco, Corcoran, all the hot spots in California. Frequently, his patients would come to visit him after they were incarcerated. And not all of them good. Some fella came in, visited him at his doctor's office. He had an office in Southern California. A fellow walks in and he has a briefcase. Says, I'm from the court system and I have some documents that I need Dr. Roth to sign. Pop says, okay, great. And says, come on into the back room. Guy says, all right, they got patients in the front or whatever. He goes into the back room. They sit down, fella across the desk. He opens up his briefcase and pulls out a loaded 45 caliber pistol. Do I got your interest now? We're going to break for spots. I'll finish the story right after this.
David Lee Roth, weekday mornings.
Guy walks into my father's doctor's office. True story. Says, I got a document from the courthouse. We need to step into the back room. You sign up a few papers here. It's legal issue, whatever. Pop says, hey, there's, you know, I got patients and people waiting in the front room there. Let's go into the back office. They go into the back office. They sit down at the table. Fellow opens up his briefcase, pulls out a loaded 45 caliber pistol. He says to Pop, I'm going to truss you up. Don't try and fight me. I got some rope, some handcuffs, whatever. I'm going to put you in the trunk of my car, and we're going to go call your son. Homeboy made a desperate error in judgment. Pop, at the time, was 57 years old. A year earlier, he had just gotten his first degree black belt. Pop had started in the martial arts late, really, diligently. And he had just gotten his black belt, had been training 4 and 5 times a week with half of the Mexican-American community in Pasadena. The same guys that I hung with coming out of high school were his teachers. Frank Trejo and the fellas were all his instructors and stuff. And Pop had a real quiet way about him. He's very different than Uncle Manny. My Pop was a very serious guy. And, dropped his voice and said, look, I'll do whatever you want. Just lower the weapon. The nurses pop through that door frequently and without announcing themselves. They don't knock all the time. I don't want anybody to get hurt. I don't need any big surprises. I'll do whatever you say. Just simply lower the weapon. After about a half an hour, as Pop described it, the fella started to lower the weapon and Pop said, boom, took out after the back door. Knocked the guy on his butt, dropped the pistol. Pop ran out the hallway that leads from the office out to the parking area in the back of his office on foot. So the guy is almost 60 years old, runs all the way around the office and literally flags a police car. Everybody comes to check the room, check the site. The other guy, the fellow with the pistol, got away. Nobody knows what happened to him at that point in time. The police go, oh, we know who this is. This is a guy who has a history, and he has done this successfully before. You got to watch out for this guy. He's a desperado. So now my house becomes like the Berlin Wall. I've got quartz lamps. I've got Rottweilers. I got guys as big as Animal here walking around with shotguns. My father at his house has the same thing. He's literally sitting at breakfast with some huge dude in a uniform reading newspapers like he's on a witness protection program. About 3 weeks later, they actually catch this guy. I'm not going to describe him, but let's call him Trouble. They catch Trouble. And the Trouble winds up in the Pasadena lockdown, okay, which is it's a half an hour away from Central in L.A., Parker Center, which is the main jail. But Parker Center is overbooked 4-1. So Homeboy, we'll call him Homeboy. Homeboy stays in the drunk tank. Most people don't spend more than 24 hours in there in Pasadena. It's a little provincial, shop, whatever. And he spends almost 18 months in the lockdown there waiting. And all people are passing in and out of the cell and so forth. And every single one of them is telling the cops the guy in there is nuts. He's babbling about all kinds of stuff. And what he was telling the other prisoners is that I had stolen his girlfriend, Kathy Lee Crosby, that I had ripped off his helicopter, and that we had a $2 million cocaine deal that I welched on, and that there was a blood feud and whatever. And the reason I know all of this is because finally, after a year and change, they go to transport this Jasper from the jail cell to the car to take him out to Central, right? And as they're doing it, two of his buddies jump out of a lowrider and at gunpoint bust him free. Knock the cops out, take their guns. This was back late 80s, I think 88, 89. He disappears. Now the FBI is at my house going, "Do you know Kathy Lee Crosby?" I said, "I'm not even sure who that is." "Do you own a helicopter?" "I don't even know how to fly one at that point in time." "Did you have any kind of deal?" He said, "No, of course not." This guy's a complete nutcase. Now my house is like the Berlin Wall, part two. He's out on the lam. He's, what do they call it? I forget, but he's out. And he's been making threats to the other prisoners, right? 2 miles from my house, they catch him 2 weeks later, and he gets into a fight with the SWAT team, and they waste him under a Toyota. Now, you tell me that I shouldn't sleep with a gun under my pillow. I don't want to carry a gun. I don't carry a gun. But every time I also go to the shooting range, I watch people make every single mistake possible. It's like Roger Rabbit or somebody's hitting the thing, then looking down the barrel with one eye. And I expect them to blow their head up into black smoke, then blink three times and their skull falls off, right? Oh, no. And you go to the shooting range and you'll see there's the family, right? And the biggest person has the littlest gun. And it goes down in the kids, right? There'll be four kids. And the littlest kid, the seven-year-old's got the .357 long barrel, .44 caliber Clint Eastwood Magnum whatever. He pulls the trigger and it blows him as far back as the bullet goes forward. And they turn to me, aiming the barrel right at little Elvis. And go, "Hey, mister, did you see where that went?" I have a problem with allowing the uneducated to have guns. So what I think should happen is that there should be mandatory education in gun control. You should be able to get whatever guns you want, but before you do that, you have to take an education course, not a safety course where you just go, "Okay, here's how you load it, here's how I take it apart, whatever," but all the basics of gun control. And if you're old enough to operate a motor vehicle and listen to 50 Cent on a CD at the same time, then you're old enough to learn gun safety course. And it should be as mandatory as learning how to use condoms. And if you think for a second that we shouldn't teach gun safety because that's going to promote guns, didn't we try that nonsense with condoms? And look what happened. And I'll give you a little taste, because I'm sure the whole liberal left is rising up even as I speak, and they say, "What are we going to need to train our kids in guns? What are you going to make a little army?" No. Our little soccer kids are not going to be doing transition drills. They're not going to do room clearing in a low light environment. They're not going to work from the roof down clearing terrorists. We're going to start off with the basics, like all guns are always loaded. What does that mean? Well, don't worry. I found this in my dad's drawer. It's not loaded. Wrong. Hey, check this out, guys. I brought it to school. I found it in my mom's purse. Don't worry, I unloaded it. Wrong. All kids by the age of 14, particularly inner city now, are going to have at least two experiences with a loaded firearm, minus any education, minus any adult supervision, whatever. And those are the ones who are going to wind up at the firing range at me like Roger Rabbit going, "Hey, mister, can you see what's wrong with this?" Boom. Second rule, gun safety. Don't point it at anything unless you intend to kill it. Hey, that's a harsh way of putting it. Well, how many times have people been playing around in a back room and go, "Hey, dude, man, put your hands up." Or we watch a video or something, like we watch a popular movie, and you go, "God, I wish I could. I'm going to hold my pistol that way. Instead of sighting it straight down the barrel, I'm going to turn it to the side, homeboy style. And I'm going to let the barrel drift and go pop, 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 and let it point straight down." How many times has somebody pulled out a real gun and says, "Don't worry, it's not loaded. Yo, put your hands up. Reach for the sky, dog. And then, boom, somebody winds up in the newspaper. All guns are always loaded. And don't ever point it unless you intend to destroy something. Now, how do you handle a loaded firearm in case you find one? I don't want my 12-year-old learning how to handle a firearm. Really? Well, what if your 6-year-old finds daddy's Derringer in the drawer and he's wandering around with it in the living room and you're not there because you got latchkey kids? That's right, I know about it. And you got a 6-year-old walking around with a loaded Derringer and the only one watching him is your 12-year-old son. Kid has a loaded firearm with the hammer back in his little hands. He's 6 years old. Happens all the time. You've got a 12-year-old watching him. Your daughter, 12 years old. Does she know how to take the firearm out of that kid's hands? Or are you going to try this nonsense of call 911 and wait 30 minutes while Junior plays in the sandpit with a loaded gun? There's a way to handle it. There's a way to teach this. And no, I'm not going to go through the whole curriculum now. But we tried to avoid this kind of educational process with condoms and AIDS awareness, STD awareness, sexual whatever awareness. And now we have an epidemic on our hands that could routinely destroy entire nations. It's because they're uneducated. People are going out of their way now to teach sexual information. And gun control or gun use or gun management or gun safety is the exact same thing. And one of the things that I share with people who are unfamiliar with guns is that all guys figure that it's just genetically imprinted in us. Why should I practice? Why should I learn gun safety? Why should I rehearse with this kind of a thing at all? Leave the music off there, Hutch. Why should I train with this? I'm a dude, right? I can handle this naturally. I'll just pull the gun out, and in the dark of my apartment, I'm going to whack the assailant, and everything's going to be just fine because I'm a natural, and I can fight with this gun without any training at all. Just remember, the bad guy's saying the same thing. I don't want no gold watch for working 50 years from 9 to 5. Play along with me, brother. Oh, while the boss is guzzling champagne and I'm belting beer and some dive, 'cause I want to be happy and free, living and loving for me. I want to be happy and free, living and reach for the sky, baby, loving for woo! Me like a natural man.
David Lee Roth in the mornings.